headlines, a convoy belonging to Iraq's popular mobilization forces reportedly comes under airstrikes near the Iraq-Syria border. A Taliban spokesperson says that the group would have no discrimination against any ethnic group in Afghanistan. And a report says China's president has turned down his U.S. counterpart's offer of a face-to-face summit amid strained bilateral ties. Hello, and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. A convoy belonging to Iraq's popular mobilization forces has reportedly been hit by airstrikes near the Iraq-Syria border. Media reports show the attack took place near the town of Al-Bukamal in Syria's eastern province of Deir ez-Zor. Three vehicles carrying infrared monitoring equipment were reportedly targeted during the airstrikes. The monitoring equipment is used to prevent infiltration by Daesh terrorists. Some reports indicate that the attack was carried out by the United States. The U.S. military, however, denied any involvement. Back in February, the Pentagon conducted airstrikes against the resistance forces in the same area. Moving on, a senior Taliban spokesperson says the group will refrain from a policy of isolationism and make efforts to engage with the world.
If we marginalize ourselves, that is not in our interest. Why we should marginalize? Will we engage with the world and then ourselves marginalize us? What is the benefit of that? It is better for us. It is the interest, our national interest, and in the interest of our country and people to have engaged with the world and the international community and to have cooperation with us.
Suhail Shaheen said the group is now focused on rebuilding Afghanistan, adding that to do so, the Taliban counts on international aid. The spokesman noted that there is no war currently on the Panjshir Valley, where there was a resistance against the group. He stressed that the Taliban preferred to resolve the issue of Panjshir through talks, but had no choice to resort to military operation when negotiations failed. Shaheen also rejected the allegations that the Taliban received assistance from Pakistan in their fight in Panjshir. On the issue of the caretaker government, the spokesperson said the group stands by its commitment to form an inclusive government.
We need such a cabinet because there was urgency, there was vacuum, and people needed some essential services. So an urgent, this cabinet was made an urgency basis, but at the same time, we believe in inclusiveness. There should be, from every ethnicity, people to see themselves in government.
Shaheen further said the group would have no discrimination against any ethnic group in Afghanistan. He stated that the Taliban respect women's rights within Islamic law, adding that they have the right to education and work. The Taliban official also noted that the group no longer sees itself as fighters, but rather servants of the people. EU leaders must end foreign interference following their disastrous involvement in the destruction of Afghanistan. That appeared to be the key message to emerge from a debate on the subject in the European Parliament. Jerome Hughes reports.
EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell has posed a series of questions to EU legislators in the light of the Afghanistan catastrophe. He asked, what does it mean for our relations with the US? And then he went on.
What does it mean for the development of European strategic autonomy, for our security and for our defense policy?
during the two-hour European Parliament debate, at least a dozen lawmakers told Borrell the last thing the EU needs is more military spending.
The lessons to be learned. We have to end universal interventionism that has only led to disasters in Syria, Iraq and Afghanistan.
Apparently, the West demonstrated enormous arrogance in Afghanistan.
In overshooting self-confidence, instead of helping nation-building, we try to impose nation-building.
The US-led invasion of Afghanistan resulted in a countless number of civilian deaths and also life-changing injuries. We have visited a center for asylum seekers in Brussels. As they wait for help, people here feel let down by EU and Belgian authorities.
They don't care about women, they don't care about children. Why they do like this? What's the difference between Afghanistan and Belgium?
The plight of Afghan refugees was also talked about at length during the European Parliament debate.
The selfishness of many European authorities and political parties that showed no solidarity towards those refugees that left the country.
The European Economic and Social Committee has published a statement pleading with EU leaders to cooperate in a meaningful way with key countries surrounding Afghanistan, including Iran, Pakistan, China, India and Russia, in order to achieve the stabilization of Central Asia. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Moving on, the Palestinian Authority has confirmed that almost 1,400 prisoners in Israeli jails are set to go on an open-ended hunger strike and protest at their detention conditions. The head of the Palestinian Authority's Commission for Prisoners says the inmates are going on a hunger strike as the situation in the jails is very bad. He noted that the prisoners will start the strike action on Friday and will be joined by other inmates next week. The prisoners say they want the Israeli regime to end its policy of repression and abuse against inmates. Earlier on Tuesday, a group of Palestinian people also went on a labor strike in occupied Al-Quds in solidarity with the prisoners. They slammed Israel's treatment of Palestinian inmates and called on the international community to take action. Political commentator Bruce Katz says the awful conditions in which Palestinian inmates in Israeli prisons find themselves are absolutely brutal and inhumane.
The awful conditions in which Palestinian prisoners, who for the very most part are political prisoners, the conditions in which they find themselves, which are absolutely brutal and inhuman. At the very heart, the Israeli prison system is at the very heart of its apartheid colonial institutions, and its extremely brutal regime, which, as far as I'm concerned, is steeped in criminality, and the way that they try to get around it is to use bugbear of anti-Semitism by accusing anyone who dares to criticize this terrible apartheid system as being anti-Semitic, when in effect the real racists are in Tel Aviv sitting in the Knesset running a corrupt government that is attempts to crush the life out of Palestinians and Bedouin on a daily basis. So, there's no surprise that the prisoners are going to go on a hunger strike once again.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has reportedly turned down an offer by his American counterpart Joe Biden for a face-to-face summit. According to the Financial Times, the Chinese president suggested that the tone and atmosphere of bilateral ties need to improve first. The two leaders spoke on the phone last week for the first time in 7 months. Washington and Beijing have been at odds over a host of issues, including the South China Sea and developments in Hong Kong and Taiwan. Beijing has maintained that the U.S. policy towards China has long been a bone of contention in relations. The UK Parliament has barred a visit by China's new ambassador after Beijing slapped sanctions against critical British lawmakers. The Chinese envoy was due Wednesday to address a group of members drawn from both the UK's Houses of Commons and Lords who work on promoting London-Beijing relations. Lindsay Hoyle, the Speaker of the House of Commons, says the visit is inappropriate while China has imposed sanctions against some British MPs. The political row between the two countries began when Britain, along with some other Western countries, placed sanctions on Chinese officials for alleged human rights abuses. In response, Beijing imposed sanctions on some British parliamentarians. Among those restrictions was a ban prohibiting lawmakers and their families from entering mainland China or Hong Kong. North Korea says the new cruise missile it has recently tested would act as a potent deterrent against hostile forces. The test launch, however, has drawn criticism from Washington. The United States says it remains prepared to engage with the North. But the question is, will a new round of talks produce any different results than the others the two sides have held so far?
On Sunday, North Korea said it has successfully test-fired a new long-range cruise missile over the weekend, the first missile launch by the country since March. According to North Korea's official news agency, KCNA, the missiles deployed during the test flew 1,500 kilometers before hitting their designated targets inside the country's territorial waters. In response, the United States military accused North Korea of posing threats to Pyongyang's regional neighbors and the international community. The North Korean outlet, however, described the new missile as having strategic significance, which will help the country counter aggression from foreign forces. The announcement has led experts to speculate that the missiles are nuclear-capable, but so far, it's unclear whether Pyongyang has perfected the technology needed to make warheads small enough to fit into cruise missiles.
The new technique and strategy has been sanctions, has been chastising DPRK for having a defensive nuclear program that has never been launched. It's not the DPRK that has launched nuclear war against Japan. They didn't launch the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It was the U.S. imperialists who did so.
The agency called the weapon a key element in a five-year plan outlined in January to further advance the nuclear-armed country's defense science and arsenals. It added, the development of the most recently tested missiles took 2 years to complete.
The United States and its regional allies have been pushing for the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula for years. The last talks between Washington and Pyongyang broke down in 2019. Some observers believe that the issue may be resolved by approaching China, North Korea's longtime ally. But Beijing and Washington haven't been on the best of terms lately.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump took an unusual approach in his North Korea policy. He began his tenure by issuing threats warning Pyongyang of, quote, fire and fury.
He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
In June 2018, however, Trump met North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore, an event that marked the first ever meeting between the two countries' leaders. The two officials met once again in Hanoi, Vietnam, in February 2019 to discuss denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and the lifting of U.S. sanctions, as well as a halt to joint military exercises conducted by Washington and its allies near North Korea, maneuvers that Pyongyang considers provocative and a national security threat. The summit, however, broke down without any tangible results. In the meantime, ties between China and the U.S. deteriorated since the president took office in 2018. The Trump administration took the country into a trade war with China, imposing billions of dollars worth of tariffs on Chinese imports.
It's not racist at all, no, not at all. It comes from China.
Trump's anti-China rhetoric escalated after the COVID-19 pandemic broke out, worsening the already frigid ties between Washington and Beijing. Many observers expected the Biden era to mark a departure from Trump's hawkish policies. Weeks into his presidency, however, the Biden administration announced new sanctions against China and threatened North Korea with military action.
Under the Biden administration, we're not going to see much headway into peace between the DPRK and the U.S., because ultimately what this comes down to is China. The U.S. wants to colonize and expand its presence on the Korean Peninsula to annex North Korea DPRK so that it can use it as a base of aggression and platform against China.
It appears that Biden has chosen the same approach toward countries the U.S. deems as its adversaries as Trump did. But wouldn't the same approach to solving a problem always produce the same result?
Moving on, the U.S. Justice Department restricts the use of chokeholds by federal law enforcement agents and warrants for their unaccounted entries into premises. Attorney General Garland announced the curbs as a confidence-building measure aimed at improving law enforcement safety and accountability. The use of chokeholds and so-called no-knock entries were at the core of several highly controversial cases of police killing targeting African Americans. Among them was the 2014 death of Eric Garner in New York and that of George Floyd, who died in May 2020 after a Minneapolis officer knelt on his neck for several minutes. In March 2020, Marina Taylor was killed in a botched police raid on her apartment in Louisville, Kentucky. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Chronic neglect of the National Health Service, poor pandemic preparedness, and flawed government policies have contributed to the appalling impact of the COVID-19 crisis in the United Kingdom. According to a damning assessment from the British Medical Association, the BMA, the article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's science editor Ian Sample. The piece is titled, BMA to Issue Damning Critique of Government Over COVID Crisis. Chronic neglect of the National Health Service, poor pandemic preparedness, and flawed government policies have contributed to the appalling impact of the COVID-19 crisis in the United Kingdom, according to a damning assessment from the British Medical Association, the BMA. More than 130,000 people in the United Kingdom have died from coronavirus since the pandemic began, with non-COVID excess deaths up 12,000 last year, making the country one of the hardest hit among comparable nations, the doctor's body said. In a speech on Monday, 13th of September, Dr. Chan Nagpal, the BMA's chair of council, warned that the country and the National Health Service staff have never faced such a crisis before, and urged ministers to take action to ensure the health service is better prepared to respond to pandemics in the future. We will not accept a return to the old pre-pandemic NHS, which was so patently understaffed and under-resourced when 9 in 10 doctors were afraid of medical errors daily, he said on Monday, 13th of September. We will not accept an NHS running at unsafe bed occupancy and without spare capacity. Before the pandemic, NHS bed occupancy was regularly above the 85%, considered a reasonable safe threshold. While the National Health Service had 7.3 critical care beds per 100,000 people, Germany had nearly 34 per 100,000 as the crisis unfolded. Further planning failures left the National Health Service with inadequate stockpiles of personal protective equipment for frontline staff, leading to last-minute orders of face masks, visors, and gowns that in some cases turned out to be unsafe or unusable. Years of underfunding, inadequate facilities, and nearly 90,000 staff vacancies meant that the NHS was in crisis before coronavirus emerged, leaving it ill-prepared for the demands of the pandemic, Nagpal argued at the BMA's annual representative meeting. He criticized ministers for dismissing calls for a rapid inquiry into the crisis before the second wave of infections struck last year, meaning that crucial lessons from previous 6 months were not learned. He added that the ministerial mantra of living with COVID belied the reality that thousands of people continue to need hospital care for coronavirus, with hundreds dying each week. Despite warnings from senior doctors at the time, Prime Minister Boris Johnson's decision to lift coronavirus restrictions this summer contributed to almost 40,000 being admitted to hospital and more than 4,000 deaths since so-called Freedom Day on 19th of July, the British Medical Association said. We will not accept a National Health Service in crisis every summer, let alone every winter, Dr. Nagpal added. We will not accept a nation bereft of public health staff, facilities and testing capacity, with ministers then paying billions of pounds to private companies who were unable to deliver. In the past week, ministers announced substantial extra funding for the National Health Service, including money specifically targeted at easing backlogs in treatment. While welcoming the funds as an important first step, Dr. Nagpal urged the government to provide realistic projections as to how far the money will stretch, and to acknowledge that the amount will not address the drastic shortage of NHS staff. The British Medical Association estimates that the National Health Service has 50,000 fewer doctors than the European Union average. More than 4 million people were on the NHS waiting list in England in March of 2020, the month the country went into its first COVID lockdown. That number has since risen to 5.61 million. The Nuffield Trust has said waiting lists could top 15 million people in 4 years without a significant increase in NHS trust capacity. Last week, GPs in England said they were finding it increasingly hard to guarantee safe care for patients, as the shortage of doctors meant they could not keep up with the surge in demand. Professor Martin Marshall, the chair of the Royal College of General Practitioners, warned of a crisis in primary care after a 4.5% decrease in the number of GPs across England led to a risk of mistakes being made.
food for thought.
Hello everyone, since today is the 7th of Safar, and it happens to be the martyrdom anniversary of the Holy Prophet's elder grandson and second infallible successor, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace be upon him, let us reflect on a gem of a saying from him. Generosity is to begin with providing the gift before it is asked from you, and serve food in times of famine, while meanness is the fewness of giving and the speech of obscene language.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. Please accept our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashimi Nejad about the master of the martyrs, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
رحمت کنه مرحوم ملا حسین مولوی قمی که از بزرگان مادهین قم بود.
ملا حسین مولوی قمی was one of the greatest eulogists of the Ahl al-Bayt and Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. His eulogies and lamentations in remembrance of the Ahl al-Bayt and Imam al-Husayn are famous. Most of the contemporary eulogists have been the students of this great man. He used to recite lamentations and supplications below the member of the greatest ulama of his time. He spent his whole life for the cause of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam and his majalis. When he passed away, one of his students saw him in his dreams. In his dreams, he was told by Mullah Hussein Molavi Qumi that when he passed away and his soul departed his body, he was asked many questions by the angels, and whenever he wanted to answer the questions, he was shocked how to answer.
یک مرتبه این شعر مشهور رو شروع کردم خوندن، به جز حسین مرا ملجأ و پناهی نیست.
At a moment he remembered the famous poem about Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, which says, I have no sanctuary except Imam al-Husayn. I am sure about my belief regarding Imam al-Husayn. Husayn is the only way of salvation. He is indeed the only way towards the divine truth. He told his student in his dream that when I repeated the name of Imam al-Husayn, my shock was gone and I found a calmness inside my heart, and all of a sudden I saw a gate over my head which was open to a very green garden. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashemi Nejad. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Cayman and a local tour guide in Bolivia's Amazon region have formed an unlikely friendship with bonds going viral on the internet. Although people are warned to stay away from caimans, Alejandro Gil has struck up a friendship with one special reptile named Jesus. Despite the caiman's carnivorous nature, it shakes his tail and allows Gil to pat it on the head after being fed. At 4 meters long, Gil, however, admits that getting close to Jesus does still make him nervous.
My knees shake when I work with Jesus. I'm always scared and very careful, and also respectful to tourists. Guides in the Pampa de Yacuma and across Bolivia consult with tourists before undertaking an activity. If they agree with it, then we do it. If one person is not in agreement with an activity, then we don't do it.
Gil says they are only able to get in touch with a caiman in a dry season when the river is at low water levels. They lose the reptile in January when the river rises. Caimans inhabit Mexico, Central and Northern South America, from marshes and swamps to mangrove rivers and lakes. Their diet consists of a great deal of fish, but caimans also hunt insects, birds, and small mammals and reptiles. A new initiative has been launched to turn the spotlight on the misery of Syrian refugee children. Little Amal, a giant puppet depicting a young Syrian refugee child, has arrived in St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. This 3.5 meter tall puppet has traveled all the way from Syria to Turkey, Greece, and Italy. It will then go to France, Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, and the UK to focus attention on the urgent needs of young refugees. Syrian refugees, especially children, are in a dire situation after being driven from their homes due to the conflict in their country. Archaeologists have discovered the largest ever bronze mask in an archaeological site in China's southwest Sichuan province.
This is a large bronze mask we unearthed from the central park of the number 3 ritual pit. The widest part, from one tip of ear to the other, is 136 centimeters, and the height is around 75 centimeters. It can be regarded as the largest bronze mask unearthed in Sanjingdui, and even the largest in the Shang and the Shu dynasties.
The mask was found together with other cultural objects such as ivory and bronzeware. These items needed to be removed first before handling the mask, which made the extraction process complicated. Restoration work is underway on the largest bronze mask taken from the site. The relic is believed to be thousands of years old, dating back to the Shu period. The site is an archaeological treasure mine belonging to the Bronze Age of over 4,000 years ago. The area was first discovered in China in the late 1920s. An Australian zoo has welcomed two baby bilbies, an endangered species. Their birth has brought joy and hope to zookeepers and wildlife enthusiasts. The baby bilbies were born in Taronga Zoo in Western Sydney. Zookeepers named the two male joeys, Molly and Cliff, after a national park that once was home to herds of this animal. The birth of the joeys has raised hope among the zookeepers of reintroducing the species to the wild. Bilbies were once found across 70% of Australia's landmass. They are believed to have inhabited Australia for up to 15 million years.
Chameleons changing color is one of the most fascinating traits amongst living creatures. Now, can't humans make a robot with the same capability? In a science lab in Seoul, a team of engineers have created a robot that mimics the color-changing ability of the famous lizard. The researchers have made the skin with a special ink that changes color based on temperature and is controlled by tiny flexible heaters. The head engineer says creating a wearable device that can actively change color and patterns was the main goal of the study.
The pattern of South Korea's military uniform is made for woodland and certain colors. So if you wear this military uniform and go to the desert, you can be easily exposed. Actively changing colors and patterns to match different surroundings is the key of camouflage technology, and we made this possible.
The total thickness of the flexible, multi-layered artificial skin is thinner than a human hair. The scientists envision that their research can be adapted for military uniforms to help soldiers blend into their surroundings. It can also be used for aesthetic purposes such as fashion, exterior of cars and buildings, as well as future display technology.
Visitors and staff of a French zoo have been amazed by the surprise birth of two African lion cubs.
The babies, a boy and a girl, were born 2 weeks ago in Amnival Zoo. Their birth was unexpected due to their father's advanced age of 17. The cubs will live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. According to zookeepers, they are currently in good health. The Amnival Zoo has asked people on social media to name the newborns. The German capital, Berlin, turns colorful as the annual mural festival has brought artists together to display their works around the city. Artists have instilled new life into neighborhoods with giant murals that attracted hundreds of visitors. This year's event was resumed under the motto Home Street Home after its 2020 edition was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Organizers say the paintings invite people to discover the city as a gigantic open-air gallery.
The Italian city of Venice has held its annual historical regatta festival, attracting hundreds of spectators. People wearing costumes rowed their colorful boats and gondolas through the city's Grand Canal. The participants reenacted the city's history by carrying people dressed up as the King of Venice and his wife up the canal. Some of the riders also put their strength to the test by racing each other throughout the day. The regatta dates back to the 13th century and has been held every year in September.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An extraordinary concert has entertained hundreds of people in the German city of Dresden. Musicians performed underwater while five steamboats accompanied them with their whistles. The City Symphony Orchestra organized the event in an attempt to boost up people exhausted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Residents welcomed the program, describing it as a glimmer of hope. They believe that the unusual concert was good for heart and soul.
Young generations are becoming more concerned about our planet and seem determined to contribute to make it environmentally friendly. A great example is this Parisian boy who spends a lot of time fishing metals out of rivers and canals in the French capital. Good for him. 11-year-old Raphael uses magnets and grappling irons to fish metal objects out of the Seine River in Paris. Over the past 2 years, he has taken hundreds of bikes, scooters and shopping trolleys out of the water. The boy says the practice was initially a hobby for him, but it eventually turned into a reasonability and a method to raise awareness about climate and environmental issues.
My goal is to raise awareness so that a maximum of people do something. They don't have to do what I do, but at least do something. Even if it's not necessarily cleaning up cannons, it could just be picking up a cigarette butt.
Raphael has also fished some very rare items out of different canals, including handguns, pieces of jewelry, and an artillery shell. An exhibition is therefore being held in Paris where Raphael's findings are going to be put on display. The young environmentalist has also been awarded the Medal of Paris, a prize belonging to the residents who accomplish a deed concerning the city. Brazilian researchers have discovered a substance that could be used as a drug against COVID-19. And you may not like where they found it. A group of scientists have come across a potentially life-saving molecule in the venom of a kind of Brazilian pit viper. It is a peptide or a chain of amino acids that limited reproduction of the coronavirus in monkey cells by 75%. The peptide can be synthesized in the laboratory, so there is no need to capture more vipers. Now the researchers will evaluate whether the molecule can be used to create medicine for treating people with COVID-19. Thousands of cows have descended from their summer quarters in the Swiss Alps to enjoy the warm temperatures of lower heights. The cattle herds spent 7 weeks in the Alpine Mountains, grazing at an altitude of nearly 2,000 meters. Their journey down started before sunrise and took almost 5 hours to complete. The cows, which couldn't make the trek due to injury, had already been carried down using trucks and helicopters. Farming has found an alternative look in the Netherlands, where cows produce milk on an eco-friendly floating farm. That may seem a surreal image of Rotterdam, the largest port in Europe. A herd of cows peacefully feed on board of what is known as the world's first floating farm. They live on the top floor of the three-story farm, while their milk is turned into dairy products on the other two floors. The floating farm opened in 2019. The owners say it aims to show the future of breeding and farming.
You must realize that the world is under pressure. Therefore, we have less and less land, agricultural land. Our idea is that in this way, we can actually create agricultural land close to the city and also adaptable to the climate.
The floating farm is seen as a good alternative for normal farming in the Netherlands. That's a country with scarce land while being threatened by climate change. The farm's owners have also applied eco-friendly methods to make it durable and self-sufficient as much as possible. The methods include using solar panels and feeding the cows with grass from sports fields.
An Australian cyclist has become the first woman in history to pull off a front flip on a mountain bike. Caroline Birkenen landed the front flip at the OD9 cycling event in the German city of Birkenfeld. The maneuver won the former two-time Olympian the women's best trick title in the event. This was the first time the nines featured a female category. The annual event gathers the world's best slopestyle and freeride mountain cyclists to Germany. A spectacular light show has mesmerized people in a Greek capital, Athens. 200 colorful drones performed a short harmonized display illuminating the night sky. Their colors and shapes were changing alongside music tracks. The show, organized by the Athens Cultural Center, took place 120 meters above the National Opera and Library. An Afghan woman has received the gift of life at a most unlikely time while flying. 26-year-old Sama Nouri was on a plane bound for Birmingham when she started having contractions. She gave birth to a little girl in an altitude of 10,000 meters with the help of a cabin crew. Born in Kuwaiti airspace, the baby is named Hawa, which means Eve or Air in Dari. Both mother and daughter are completely healthy. The aircraft was carrying Afghan citizens evacuated from Kabul. The passengers left behind their old lives, but were gifted with a new one in the process. After all, life does find a way. one of Mexico's largest zoos has launched a one-of-a-kind exhibition, with the star of the show being a manatee couple. Visitors will be able to see the couple at the new exhibition, which is part of the largest aquarium in the country. The zoo received the manatee couple from the Caribbean with the intention of raising awareness for the protection of the species. Part of the ticket proceeds will go towards conservation efforts. Manatees are fully aquatic, mostly herbivorous marine mammals that are sometimes known as sea cows. These funny-looking creatures are endangered because of pollution and fishing techniques.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
The FBI released a newly declassified document late on Saturday, 11th of September, describing connections that the agency examined between the hijackers of 9/11 and the Saudi Arabian government in the years since the September 11, 2001 attacks, although it contained no conclusive evidence about whether the Saudi kingdom played a role in the attacks. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Mark Mazzetti and Michael Schmidt. The piece is titled FBI Releases Newly Declassified Documents Related to September 11th Attacks. The FBI released a newly declassified document late on Saturday, 11th of September, describing connections that the agency examined between the 9/11 hijackers and the Saudi government in the years since the 11th of September 2001 attacks, although it contained no conclusive evidence about whether the Saudi kingdom played a role in the attacks. The 16-page report, which was issued hours after President Joe Biden arrived at the World Trade Center Memorial in Lower Manhattan, is the first document to be released since President Biden last week moved to declassify materials that for years have remained secret. Families of the 9/11 victims have long pushed for a deeper investigation into any possible role the Saudi government had in the 9/11 attacks. President Biden instructed the Justice Department and federal agencies in recent days to release declassified documents over the next 6 months after a group of hundreds of affected people, including survivors of 9/11, emergency medical workers and victims' relatives, told him to skip the memorial event at Ground Zero this year if he did not move to disclose some of those documents. The document, which was heavily redacted, describes an interview conducted in November of 2015 with a Saudi Arabian national, a Saudi man identified only as PII, who was applying for American citizenship. He detailed his work at the country's consulate in Los Angeles, California, and shared anecdotes about his personal interactions with embassy leadership. The document also summarizes his contact with people who investigators said had provided significant logistics support to two of the 9/11 hijackers. Some members of the commission that investigated the 2001 attacks believed that if the Saudi government had any role in the 9/11 plot, it was likely to have involved consular officials. But the document released on Saturday, 11th of September, provided no new conclusive evidence about the Saudi government's role in the 9/11 attack. Speculation around the possible Saudi role increased over the years because of the U.S. government's refusal to declassify 28 pages of a 2002 congressional inquiry into the 9/11 attacks that specifically addressed possible connections between the Saudi kingdom and the 9/11 terrorist plot. The document was finally released in 2016, and it detailed numerous suspicious meetings between Saudi officials and the 9/11 hijackers, and checks from Saudi royals to operatives in contact with the 9/11 hijackers. It was also an unflattering picture of the kingdom's efforts to thwart American operations against al-Qaeda in the years before the 9/11 attacks. The question of whether any Saudi official played a role in the 9/11 plot has festered for two decades, despite numerous investigations into the attacks. The Saudi government has long denied any involvement. Its embassy in Washington, D.C. issued a statement this week saying any allegation that Saudi Arabia is complicit in the 9/11 attacks is categorically false. In its 2004 final report, the September 11 Commission said it had found no evidence that the Saudi government as an institution or senior Saudi officials individually funded al-Qaeda. But some former commission staff members have pointed out that the careful wording of the report did not rule out the possibility that lower-ranking Saudi officials had indeed helped the 9/11 hijackers. They also said that the commission, operating under extreme time pressure, could not run every lead to the ground.